What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Savers Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Losing has to hurt more than winning. I mean, it has to mean more. It has to hurt you more. In the losing that style, you've got to hate losing more than you like winning. We've been a team since the start of the year that has had a tough time dealing with, you know, inside the game, a little bit of adversity, whether it's, you know, kind of a lucky goal at the start of the third, or, you know, we make a bad play, whether we've compounded that with we haven't had that next couple lines come out and say that ain't going to happen again.
Next attempt to reverse some of those words, obviously, tomorrow night as Carolina comes in for a, please note the start time, 6 p.m. start. Yes, it's television driven, but not by us, Marty.
18 o'clock, as we used to say it. That's probably the first military time that I remembered, like, on TV when I was a kid, because it would be the news or something at
right.
6 o'clock
yes.
or whatever. Yes. So it was always 1800. That's
1830 in Newfoundland.
That's what they did say. They always said that 1800. No, it actually was 1800. It was 1900 in the Maritimes, 1930 in Newfoundland,
yes.
because
My
it was
bad.
An hour and a half later. But yes, that was the Canadian history lesson for today. You know what's funny about the Lindy Ruff quote about you got to hate
nothing,
losing?
Nothing, actually, is my guess.
No, because, you know, we just played that alumni game against the Shorzy, you know, people or whatever. And that's the line from Shorzy
is not
the same. Is
that part of their pregame speech?
It's not from the pregame speech, but the line from Shorzy is not the same. Is that the owner, she says... They don't love to win. He goes, no, it's not that. It's that they don't hate to lose. Like, you have to hate losing more than you have to love winning. That's what Shorzy always says, because losing's got to hurt. And people are going to say, that's the same thing. I can tell you as a player, I won a game. I came back to the room, and there's guys that are like, yeah, we won. Yeah, we celebrate, right? You celebrate a playoff win. You celebrate, like, you know, a milestone win, something. But I would win a game and I'd be like, okay, what's on to the next, right? Mm-hmm. I'd lose a game. It would stay with me. Like, I wanted to see, what did I do that made it that I lost? I can't give up that goal. Can't make that play. Like, that's what hating to lose is compared to loving to win. Like, there's a difference between the two of them. And I think Lindy is trying to teach that difference to the players in the way that they need to play inside the game.
Right. And on the heels of a resounding victory over Ottawa, it was just another unexpected, maybe I shouldn't use that word, because unfortunately now they've had a half dozen games where they've had multi-goal leads disappear.
Yeah.
But it still feels unexpected in the moment when you and I are sitting there after 20 minutes on the broadcast talking about, again, like every single thing that they did right. And then you get into a window now where they're playing two games in 8 days, and almost everybody outside of Pittsburgh is soaring
yep.
up the Eastern Conference ladder, right? And it's one loss, right? Like, it now lingers because you're not in a super busy stretch this week, and everybody else stockpiled over the course of the weekend. So it's...
Can you go 5-2-1 in your 8-game segment, as you pointed out, your 5 8-game segment? Absolutely, you can go 5-2-1.
Sure.
You lost the first game, so go 5-1-1. That's doable. It's mm-hmm. not a problem. But you're right. Like, tonight in the NHL, just look at the games, right? Detroit plays. The Bruins and the Lightning's play, so somebody's going to get 2 points. The Flyers and Blue Jackets play, somebody's going to get 2 points. The Penguins are hosting the Kraken. Ottawa and the Islanders played, so somebody's got to get 2 points. There's so many of those games that are happening that Yeah, I mean, one loss kind of in a very not busy stretch for the Sabres, it really sets you back a little bit. That 2 points would have meant a lot against in the last game.
Is Ottawa, New York, a bet the farm, guaranteed, beyond regulation game?
It should. But when usually we have a bet the farm situation, we lose the farm, so we don't have a farm to bet anymore. But I think it feels like a 3-point game in this one. It feels like, again, there could be plenty of 3-point games, which is what teams have done. There's a lot of teams that have been able to get that extra point and get that extra point and get to overtime. Montreal won 2 in overtime. They got to overtime, then they get that extra point, but still just getting there, getting a point is big.
Yeah, I mean, Suzuki's been a catalyst. Obviously, they had a slight, although again, beyond regulation hiccup against Dallas on Saturday. And then Dallas, of course, rolled over. I don't say rolled over, but they weren't nearly as sharp the next night when Ottawa beat them. So, and Dallas will continue along tonight as they take on Toronto to close out their trip. But back to the words of the coach and the question of the now moment for this group is, like, why can't they build off of these almost top of the league starts to games? Like, they are so good in goal differential in first periods, so good at scoring first, so good in total goals scored in first periods. What's amiss here?
I think Lindy Ruff has talked about it. In last game, he was really pushing the buttons with the amount of words that he was using about, horrendous second period, perimeter play, staying on the outside, too comfortable on the outside. And I guess this has now been for probably 3 weeks to almost a month. He was saying, like, oh, we got to get point shot traffic, chaos in front of the net. And then he kind of switched a little bit after a while, says, we got to stay away from getting the point shot. We got to get to the slot. We got to get to the middle. We have to bypass. And that's what I'm seeing now, is that everything's on the perimeter, everything's on the outside, get a point shot through. But good teams find the middle. Good teams attack the middle. Players that have success go to the middle. And I think that's what Lindy Ruff was talking about. And we didn't see that. So you start a game, first period, you get chances, you create off the rush, you attack, that's great. But how do you consistently produce, and how do you consistently win games and have success, is by getting to the slot, getting to the middle. And the Sabres have not done that well. And now you see that, well, teams are like, oh, we just got to take away the rush. Like Seattle is, oh man, Buffalo's coming really quick on the rush, and look at how they attack us, and they get a 2-0 lead. And if a team is adjusting on the way that they play against the rush, then all of a sudden you take all the offense away, and then the Sabres are turning puck overs and, you know, trying to create things when it's not there, and you're making it easy for the other team. That's where the problem is. That's where Lindy Ruff has talked about battle drills and 2-on-2 and getting to the middle, because he understands now that the rush chances, once they disappear, seems like the Sabres don't get enough from the slot to be able to sustain more offense in the second and third period.
Right, but those shouldn't directly correlate with extended shifts, own zone giveaways, things like that. Like, the two can be separate, right? Like, you can exist well enough defensively without, you know, not necessarily having an A game all the time offensively, right? Like, you can,
yes,
you can make it more of a low event game, correct?
Yes, and you can focus on the defensive side of things. But I think there was times this year where Lindy has been focused more on the defensive side of the game and trying to almost win games 2-1. And that really didn't work either, right? So now you're like caught in between. And do I have the team to go out there and win games 2-1, make it low event? Or do I have to try to win with scoring 4? And so now you're, okay, well, let's try to win with scoring 4. How do we create more offense? How do we get that? And so I think you're kind of caught between the hard rock and the hard place here, because you've tried a few things now. You've evaluated and tried a few things and are still searching for the right recipe.
So then what?
Well, now it comes down to creating it.
But I mean, do you keep, you know, assuming they're working their way back to health here, you know, these illnesses that go through any and all professional sports teams typically at almost this exact time of year can linger for sure. But, you know, they're honestly, they have been and are quite healthy in contrast to a number of teams. So saying all that, like, do you, again, try to look for something different in your lines and pairings to maintain what you think they are, which is a rush team, but do you look for defensive conscience, posture, you know what I mean? Like, do you tweak to potentially take away offensive ideals from a line or pairing in a quest for a little bit of both on a line and a pair? And honestly, I don't even, I'm saying this out loud, but I don't know what would that would look like in the form
I don't know what that would look like, because I don't know that the roster is built in the way that you're like, all of a sudden we're going to be a shutdown team, right? And I don't know that's really what you can do with that. I think a lot of it revolves around the health of Tage Thompson. And do you want to not all of a sudden say, okay, well, Tage is going to go back to the middle? Because if you decide you want to put Tage back in the middle at some point here, being that you've gotten a little bit more rest and there's not as many games, or maybe it happens in a week from now, then, okay, well, are you going to be putting Tage and Tuck together again with maybe Peterko, who's played well with McLeod and a little bit better with McLeod and Tuck, but is that maybe where you want to go and kind of change your lineup? But if you are hoping to just keep Tage on the wing because you like the shot volume and you like how he's been able to look better from the side and coming into the net and attacking, then, well, it's going to have to be by just creating more offense. And how do you create offense? Well, you get to the middle and you win these one-on-one battles. And I think that's what it comes down to. Because you look at the Seattle game, it felt to me like this should have been cruise control. You've got that game locked up, right? You're up 2-0 and there's 30 minutes left. It's halfway into the game. You're still up 2-0. Mm-hmm. You're up 2-1 with 21 minutes left, a minute left in the second. It felt like Seattle didn't have much. You had that game under control and it fell apart. Number one, because I think the power play didn't come through in the way they needed to at the start of second and third. But two, you just gave the puck away. You made bad plays. Mm-hmm. So do you want to completely change how you're going to play because you mismanaged the puck? No, but it has to become something that doesn't happen regularly anymore, because it seems to have happened too many times.
Correct. Carolina is next. They're pretty similar to what they've been for a long period of time under Rod Brind'Amour. They almost always outshoot their opponents. They don't give up much, which tends to reflect in nice goals against average, which is top 10, but a less than nice team save percentage, because again, they don't give up many shots. Yeah. So unless their goaltenders are close to perfect, they end up bearing the brunt of, I don't think we're going to see Ticker, Dustin Tokarski, even though he's 4-1, 2.0, 907, coming off a very low event shutout. What was it, 13 saves the other day? 13 or 14?
I think it was 13 at the end of it. I think I saw 14 the night before, but one was taken away. Figure it out. Adjustment on the shots the next day. That's what happened.
Exactly. But I mean, we know now they stubbed their toe on Eric Staal's retirement jersey night on Sunday. They fought back. They ended up losing in overtime to Anaheim, but they still are very much the Canes we have seen and known for a long time. Like, how good are they, and what is the next new challenge here for Buffalo tomorrow?
Okay, so number one, the Carolina Hurricanes, I feel, you know, yes, they have Sebastian Aho and they have Marty Natchez. Natchez has cooled off a little
He's warmed up again. He's back to closer to – he's got 6 points in the last seven.
He was like a beast coming out at the start of the season, and it was great to see. I don't think that Carolina scares you with their forward individually. When you look at the board and you say, okay, Svechnikov is now playing on the third line, Jarvis, Natchez, Aho, it's like, okay – but they play a very, very structured, very, like, they lean on you for a whole game. They continue to just put you under pressure, which is what Buffalo has not been able to respond this year. When a team start leaning on you, they've fallen apart a little bit, and they've given up too much. So that's the test. I think that's why Lindy Ruff is talking so much about this, you know, inside game and this winning battles and this puck management, because you know Carolina is going to be a big game. Tomorrow at home, and you got to get that win. But Carolina does exactly at their best what Buffalo has not been able to be at their worst. So that matchup could be very problematic. But if you manage the puck, I feel like you can take advantage of that Hurricanes team.
They haven't been particularly great on the road. The Canes are a game under 500 in that regard, but obviously still very much in pursuit of the division crown and, you know, very, 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 very likely to be a playoff team once again.
Do you look at their goals for, goals against per game? It's very good, but who's really standing out from that group, right? That's the thing.
Well, balance, like, and that's their beauty. And it
balance
has been their
is the beauty. Like Jack Roslovic and Eric Robinson and playing top 6 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Jordan Martinook and Jordan Staal had a hat trick just, you know,
Marty,
last week.
Nobody liked Shane Gostisbehere years ago. He reworked his career. And then after the Canes lost two of their top four defensemen, he comes in and, you know, has filled a void. Like they've done a nice job. They've found good fortune in some value signings.
100%. And, I mean, Eric Robinson with 10 goals this year, like, we saw Eric Robinson in Buffalo, and you're like, wow. Mm-hmm. Like, you're getting that, and you're able to get the consistent playing out of everybody. So that's what Carolina is. That's what they are. And if Buffalo doesn't have their team game ready to go, it's not going to go well. And that's why Lindy Ruff's putting a lot of emphasis on that.
Right. And, obviously there's two this week at home before the 4-game Western trip. Pittsburgh is here on Friday. They've got their own issues with just one win in the last seven. It does feel like, an incredibly critical stretch in advance of, I don't know. Funny, depending on where your head is at, how you look at schedules. I actually kind of love the layout of next week's road trip. It's an afternoon game on Monday, right? Like, I feel like that's advantageous and thus buys you a little bit more recovery time into the back end of back-to-backs. And let's not forget, like, back-to-backs have been a huge problem right now for this team this year, in front end and back end. So maybe because this one looks a little different in how it's laid out time-wise, and then you get back into your normal routine of day off, game Thursday in Calgary, day off, early game in Edmonton on the Saturday. It's a 2 p.m. local, 4 p.m. Eastern start time. So, I don't know. We're always trying to, you know, look at where you can take advantage of schedules, and I'm not, you know, they're obviously in no position to count anything. I still can't believe a little bit of Saturday based on what Seattle then proceeded to do, which was continue their losing ways in a miserable showing against the Red Wings the very next day on Sunday.
Yeah, no, it was not good. They gave up 3 goals in the first 4 shots and never really recovered. And we talked about Joey Decord, how important he was to their success. And Philip Grubauer goes in and did not look good. And look, your teams are going to have those type of nights. Seattle has had a lot of them of late, and the Sabres had them in a position where they should have pushed them out. They should have pushed them out by leaning on them. They should have pushed them out by making it tough on them. Mm-hmm. And instead, it went the other way. And that's why it was so frustrating for Lindy Ruff to be able to sit there after the game on Saturday and say, you know, all the quotes and all the things that he said. But if he said it to the media, he said it in the locker room, and everybody got to go home on Sunday as a day off and come back to practice on Monday thinking, well, we have practice Monday, we have practice Tuesday, we have a game Wednesday. Like, we know we're going to be working at practice. You know, I'm not saying, I hate to say back in the days, but, you know, the way that the schedule works now and the practice times and the scheduled days off, and it's all great. It's way better for the players. But after that game Saturday, like, the old mentality, the Rob Ray, me, like, late 90s, early 2000 would have been back skate on Sunday and practice Monday, Tuesday, and you're completely exhausted Wednesday. And it doesn't matter what happens Wednesday night because the message has been sent and you get killed on Wednesday night. It changed now. But that was the type of mood Lindy was in Saturday after the game, that if they had practiced Sunday, it would have been a no-puck showing. That's really what it was like 20, 30 years ago.
Don't forget the game tomorrow, 6 p.m. start. It's on TNT and WGR Sports Radio 550 as Carolina comes in. Pittsburgh is here on Friday. Your more familiar start time. It's a 7 o'clock game, and it'll be on MSG. Is Detroit... are they... Who's more for real, Detroit or Montreal at this moment? Detroit's won 7 in a row. The Habs are 9-3-1.
The reason why I want to lean to Detroit is because I think Detroit has a better roster than Montreal, a slightly better roster, and Todd McLellan now has made a big difference in, you know, the changes in Detroit. I heard some players talking about how, you know, they're not afraid to lose anymore. Like, it's almost like they were playing afraid to lose early in the season, but McLellan's come in and changed their approach, and they're not afraid to lose. They're playing to win, and it's
so he purposely tanked his first game just so
just
it's like
to send
okay,
message,
you guys can handle
like,
losing.
Guys,
I know you can handle losing.
You guys are terrible, but we can handle losing. Don't be afraid to getting blown out like you did in the first game. But no, I want to say Detroit to me is a team that is probably better than Montreal.
It's a coin flip, I would say, because with the Habs 9-3-1, they've been obviously led by Suzuki and Caulfield, but they've had incredible contribution and goal from Jakub Dobish, who's 3-0. And honestly, you've been a fan of Montembeau for a while. Their overall numbers aren't going to paint him or their defense in the nicest light, but the point, it's because their sample size is bigger than what we're focused on right now, which is just their last 13 games. So they have found a way. The Detroit thing is amazing and, again, unsurprising. Like, you have to have the top players lead the way. Oh, look, Pat Kane and Alex DeBrincat are riding the longest point streaks in the NHL right now. Seven gamers, right? Like, what decade is this? And but
is it Chicago?
I know, that's the thing, right?
So well, that's why they got them. That's why they were that's what they were hoping. And look, you know, look at Lucas Raymond. Look at Larkin playing better. I mean, that's
well, those
what
guys I would say have been consistently there, but they don't get talked about because it's like they were almost on an island. It's like there's only so much they can do. And you talk about, you know, being afraid to lose. I think Larkin for sure was probably at that point, like, oh my gosh, like, what more can I do here? I'm afraid to make a mistake because who else is going to care? You know, and Dylan went through a 15-game goalless drought. And now Casper has also endured that, obviously, much further down the lineup, but still high hopes as a young player. And this is stuff that we talk about a lot. Like, okay, you're clearly talented enough to be in the NHL. You have to add to the bottom line of success here. And now Casper is in a better spot because Kane and DeBrincat look like Kane and DeBrincat, and it provides the proper balance. And, you know, obviously the Sabres, one example of that would be Jiří Kulik, right? Like, you can't just expect him to come in and push the team forward, right? He had a couple of good moments before being injured. I'm just saying, this is my long way of saying, like,
no,
obviously.
I'll tell you this. I didn't like the way the Detroit Red Wings and Steve Yzerman built this team, because I felt he brought in a lot of older guys and guys that were like, you know, where are you going with JT Compher? Where are you going with Andrew Kopp? Where are you going with, you know, like Joe Valeno and Tyler Motte or whatever? But the little bit older, more experienced guys have brought in stability, I feel, in that lineup, right? The Ben Sherratt brought in a little bit stability, even though he's, you know, Ben Sherratt, whatever. But it's that age difference has made that age gap has made a difference in Detroit, I think, in them being able to flip it a little bit this year.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think all of your projected role players appear to be more successful when your best players are taking on 100%. The expected responsibility, right? So now Detroit has, remember,
rising tides lifts all boats, right? That's what it is. Your best players, if they perform, all of a sudden your supporting staff feels like they're just rising with everybody else.
Everybody starts raving about, boy, what a good fourth, fifth, and sixth defenseman you have. Yeah, well, that's because the guys up front are now no longer being victimized in a shot volume way the way the Red Wings were the first 3 months. Remember how historically bad they were getting outshot basically 31-21 most nights and some nights not getting to 20. Well, guess what? That has flipped now under Todd McClellan. They have a higher shot volume and their power play is running at 50%. Yeah. 50.
It like, was bad. It was terrible.
Like their penalty kill was atrocious, but but
Shane made sure she pointed that out many, many times on our show about how the Islanders and the Red Wings penalty kill were like in the 60% range. And it was like, how can you, that if there's one thing coaching is supposed to do is when it comes to special teams, especially the penalty kill, you should be able to teach the penalty kill and have the right structure and right system and all of that. And your penalty kill is at 60%. That's what basically cost Derek Lalonde his job in Detroit. And his you know, penalty kill mostly was just atrocious.
The PK is on a little uptick under McClellan, I believe. I think it's around 70%. So when you couple that with a power play that is an absolute juggernaut right now, more often than not, you're winning the special teams battle. Buffalo hopes
PDO
to do that.
PDO you talked about the other day. That's the... PDO? That's what it is.
Oh, the PDO, right? The save percentage and shooting percentage.
The save shooting percentage has gone up for Detroit, too.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing you bring up here, is it's not like they've had all-world goaltending since McClellan took over. They've had ongoing health issues, right? Yeah. So therefore, a lack of consistency to a certain extent, but they're able to outscore some of their deficiencies right now. And that takes us back to a place that, you know, again, when you're looking at how Buffalo is starting games, it's surprising that they're not being able to continue outscoring opponents in the back half of games because they look so sharp and so crisp to start these games.
And the questions last game a lot were revolving around the mental side of the game. And maybe we can touch on that a little bit after, because I find it like it's really hard for players to put it into words, how your psyche goes sometimes after one mistake, two mistakes, how you adjust and you're being asked and it feels like you're not answering a question. But that is probably the biggest thing when you look at games unraveling after good starts is that aspect of the game that's really hard to put your finger on.
We'll take a quick break. Before we do, a reminder that you have an opportunity right now to bid on game-worn home Royal jerseys from this season, and you can own these one-of-a-kind piece of Sabres merchandise by going to sabres.com/auction today. It is Buffalo and Carolina at KeyBank tomorrow. Again, note the early start time. It's a 6 p.m. start. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Apologies for not pumping Plowmaster 43 a little earlier. I figure you've probably been behind the wheel a little bit of late. Is that ongoing? I'm not following the social media page. Is it snowing in Hamburg? So is it snowing in Hamburg?
No, it was. It was kind of a bit of a whiteout yesterday, early dismissal.
Well, no, I was there for that. I just didn't know today.
And today, early dismissal for the kids this afternoon as well. So I was plowing last night and this morning and getting a few things done. And it's nice, though. It's beautiful. I love it. Cold and snowy. And I know it's going to be cold for the Bills game Sunday, but that's Western New York. That's what I love. I love a cold winter that stays white and doesn't melt and get yucky everywhere. But anyway, Plowmaster was out and getting the job done, and it's been fantastic. So
how's the new plow?
Well, the plow's the same. The truck is great.
The combo, the duo. How's the new duo?
I got a snow Joe. Do you know what a snow Joe is?
Nope.
Okay, so you know how you got your like brush to brush the snow or whatever? Well, a snow Joe is an actual like kind of like foam block that just pushes the snow. It doesn't brush it. It just pushes it off your truck or whatever. I get my pickup truck, like the pickup bed, right? It was always like, oh, you got to brush it off. That thing is like 1, 2, 3 passes, the snow is gone. It's completely gone. And you can also use it on your roof. Like, you know, so some of those that have the tin roof or the copper roof, you got to remove some of the snow. The Snow Joe is no joke. I'm telling you. I'm doing an infomercial on the Snow Joe right now, preparing for my second and third career.
Is that one of those made-for-TV sales things? Like, is it a television exclusive?
Yeah, and it also extends. It's like the Snow Joe extends in the
middle.
And
if you order right now, you'll get a second one?
Second from $19.99, the second one. And shipping is free if you order
it should be.
A
it's coming
one.
From Grand Island, New York, Marty. Yeah, exactly. Obviously, it shouldn't cost that much.
So the Snow Joe is something that I've seen a few people with them, and I was like, I don't know about this. And then, this could be the least
surprising development in our conversation today. The fact that you are all in on every possible snow removal technique, and you are like, you genuinely come across with the excitement of getting this gift as if you were a 10-year-old on Christmas, right?
Well, like, yes, the little things in life that really bring the joy in my everyday occurrence. Yes,
this is why people love being around you. It wasn't intended to be this way, but you did say before the break, like, you want to talk about the mental side of the game. And without saying it and stating the obvious, it's hard as an athlete to stay in the right place through this. Look, last night we did a Blue and Gold Insights.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Season ticket members at the arena. Think about what it was like last night. It was crappy, blustery, awful, right? We still had a great turnout, caring people that were listening intently to the words of three still very, very, very young NHL players. Bo Byram, Zach Benson, and Jack Quinn.
Wow.
Bo conducts himself, despite being just over 200 games in his NHL career. He won't say this. He wouldn't even think this. But I think he conducts himself like a 30-year-old. Mm. Like, his presence and comfort and willingness to be kind of the leader of the trio that was up on stage with me last night was so impressive. He didn't hide from the reality of where the team is at and what they've gone through. And there were multiple times where he stressed how fortunate anyone is to be in the position of being a player in the NHL.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, like, it's not easy. Not easy to say that based on what they're still trying to attain in the standings and how they're trying to be on a daily basis. So I think that probably fits nicely into a little bit of where you want to go here for this group. From the mental side of it.
Now, and it's important to point that out. And there's some players that obviously are going to handle it and learn the tools of the mental side of the game and the maturity that you need to put in to play in the NHL or any field, right? Any job. Like if you get higher and more successful and more responsibilities, there's maturity, there's experience that has to come into play. But there's people that will never get there. I had a player with the Rangers. He was so talented. And we brought in a couple of veterans and experienced veterans. And one of those experienced veterans was Brad Richards. And Richie was trying to help this player out. I won't name name, but, you know, it was trying to. And this player, during a Road to the Winter Classic interview, it was on HBO. It was for everybody to see. He said, well, I learned something this year from Brad Richards. I learned that sometimes you may think one way, but you have to show, you know, maturity, even though you may not believe it. And it was like, that's not what I'm trying to teach you. I'm trying to teach you, you have to believe the maturity has to take over. You have to change the way you're thinking. Like, it was so funny. That player was like, you have to put the front like you're mature, but really, like, it was like, no, that's not what I'm trying. So that player never got it, right? It never understood what needed to be taken. Now, here's how I talk to my kids all the time about this. Are you going to make mistakes in life, in sports, in whatever? Yes, you are. Failing is a part of growing. Failing is a part of learning. But if you don't learn the lessons, then you're not growing. You're not maturing. You're making the same mistakes over and over again. There's people that they got to where they are now by having success and having skill level that are better than everybody else. But now, how do you separate yourself from where you are to where you want to be is the mistakes that you make and you stop making them. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I remember years ago, Lindy Ruff was so mad at Chris Gratton, always talking to Gratz about how he could be a point of game player. He could be a 40 goal scorer. But what made the difference between Chris Gratton being a point of game and 40 goals and what Chris Gratton ended up being, which was still pretty good, but not fully attaining his potential, was the mistakes, and it wasn't physical mistakes. The guy was a physical specimen. It was the mental mistakes. And being able to handle that, being able to learn, being able to go watch film and process what is going on. Because the way the game is played in your head, it's almost like a video game. It's almost like you watch it, you get back to the bench, you see it on the screen, and you're like, oh, this is the play I can make. And on the ice, it happens so fast, but you have to have seen it. You have to process it. You have to get mature. And that's the level where Lindy's trying to get them to. And right now, it has been a challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's not, if you have one or two guys that mentally are going to struggle and make mistakes, that's fine. But when you have four, five, six on any given nights that go through that, that's where it's hard. And that's the challenge to get over that now. And this year has been a very, very tough to handle it on that side.
Yeah, indisputable on that. And obviously they're well aware of it. And now the hope is that they come out of the shoot after a little bit of time off here against Carolina. Get back in the win column, close out the homestand with a couple of wins. Carolina tomorrow, Pittsburgh on Friday, before embarking for a 4-game and 6-day trip next week. Now, there were some incredibly exciting sports moments over the course of the weekend, highlighted, of course, by Sunday's Bills playoff win. Yes. But the two-time defending National Lacrosse League champion Buffalo Bandits and six-time champion overall remain undefeated, and this was some kind of game. Marty, I was there in Banditland, but then the next day I rewatched the entire game, and I'm not kidding you, there were moments on the rewatch where I was like, I don't know if they're going to pull this out.
Yeah, it was very tight.
It was amazing. Anyway, they're down with less than 75 seconds to go. Chase Fraser ties it. And then the unexpected development of Nick Weiss scoring the winner. Now, Nick has, in limited goal scoring, had some enormous goals in the course of his career. But this, I mean, Marty, they led for less than 5 minutes in this game up until this moment. And this was a last-minute go-ahead goal by Nick Wiese. They would get a huge save from Matt Vince on the following possession and then seal it with the Dane Smith empty netter. So they defeat Toronto 15-13. This Saturday night, Banditland comes alive again with a matchup of the two best teams in the league. Philadelphia has won four in a row. They are 4-1 on the season, and they're taking on the unbeaten Bandits on Saturday night. Can't wait to be there for that, and can't wait to see what Ian MacKay is able to do. I would say for an encore, but this might be a surprising development for some. Ian MacKay is leading the Bandits in goal scoring this year. Mm-hmm. He has 2 5-goal games to his credit. And when we just talked everything we talked about from an athlete standpoint and preparation and overcoming mental hurdles and challenges, last week was such a hard week for Ian. He lost his stepfather, Steve. He was very open about Steve's presence in his life on social media. Driving to the rink for the Friday game, he had Steve's cap on his dashboard, and he posted that on Instagram. Yep. He went out and matched his career high with 5 goals, set a career high with 8 points. He was the MVP of the Bandits game against Toronto. It was so impressive to watch, and I'm so happy for a guy that we've gotten to know a little bit in our dealings with the Bandits over the years. He's just an incredibly impressive athlete and person.
And you know that the Bandits and that locker room and that team wanted to support him and wanted to give him all the chances that he could to have this amazing game, right? And that's the thing with Banditlands, is they've helped one another and supported one another, and that's why they're winners, right? That's why they've won a couple of championships in a row, and they're fun to watch, and you can sense the love every time they're on the floor together. And it was a physical game against Toronto. Fights and arguing, but they stuck together, and that was fun. Because you're my lacrosse expert, I always, and the way that the Bandits scored their winning goal on a rush, right? They ran the floor. Very, very few times do you see that happening. You run the floor, and then you get to a certain point in transition where everybody stops, everybody slows down because everybody's changing. Mm-hmm. But has it happened more late in games where you take that chance late in game to score on the rush? Because that's how they scored their 14th goal. That was the game-winning goal. And I fully expected them to retreat and be like, okay, we're going to set up our offense. But they went and challenged it on the rush and scored that way.
That one's really hard to answer,
but it seems like you get a breakaway, but then they pull up.
Well, this is the thing. I would need to hear not so much Priolo, who had an incredible loose ball recovery to start that transition.
Yeah.
That's kind of the norm in a situation like that. And then, like you say, once you get down the floor, you may look at making sure the ball is going to get into the hands of Dane, Josh, Deoka,
Ian,
et cetera, right? But what happened on this play, which is why I think Wiese knew that he was green-lighting himself and was probably getting the green light from the bench in that situation, was because there was star power already on the floor. And Toronto defended it like, we're going to take away Josh and not let this pass happen.
Yeah.
And once Nick knew that, he absolutely went for it, obviously, like he looked the part, obviously, with that finishing play. It was really impressive. And again, you know this from living in a moment. The building was going bonkers because Fraser had just tied it less than 30 seconds earlier. So you feel things as a player in a surge of being able to attack a game a different way, right? In a moment. And Nick has been around a long time, is a leader in Bandit land, and knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, it worked out for the Bandits. It was fun amazing to watch. It was amazing.
It was so amazing.
And I'll tell you this. Try to be in person, because lacrosse in person is fantastic, but the production value and the way that they're showing it on TV now is you can sense the excitement, especially when they're in Bandit land.
Indeed. They're 4-0. They get Philly on Saturday. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Kings lost 1-0 to Connor McDavid and the Oilers last night. It was Connor's 28th birthday. That paled in comparison to the shellacking they took at the hands of the Sabres 19 years ago here in Buffalo, 10-1. Marty, how was your view of this acing of Garon, Hauser, and Kump, not Michael Hauser, in goal for LA?
So I remember that game like yesterday because I thought I played in the game. But I was on the bench. Ryan Miller played in the game. I'm like, I remember beating the Kings 10-1. It wasn't this game. We beat them a few times handily, but my view was great. And, 10-1 games, you don't see that too often.
No, Pominville and Hesh both had hat tricks in the game. Perhaps a duplication of the feat tomorrow. Buffalo hosting Carolina. We'll see you tomorrow.